I'm David Keenan, live from the Walkmans for the Sunday Sessions. This is my song.
I was told long ago that you learn more on a building site than you would in school. I don't know who's to know in El Paso. Friday nights to floodlights, you'd hear us roar. Sing the time till we die, then our truce went so. We have grown on the road to El Paso. Photographs on your mantelpiece, they fade. Sitting at some bus stop in the pouring rain. In your mind, things are juicy. Let the shoes on the other foot out, does that feel? If you wanna go, I'll take you there. I'll feel the rain on your face in the morning air. Let's go back, take me back to El Paso. Go around with your tie in your briefcase, with a look on your face like I'm a waste of space. Take me back to El Paso. Oh, take a walk, take a walk down the Echo Road. I'll be waiting. Don't you know I'll be waiting? And if you wanna go, I'll take you there. I'll feel the rain on your face in the morning air. Let's go back, take me back to El Paso. Go around with your tie in your briefcase, put a look on your face like I'm a waste of space. Take me back, take me back, take me back, and let's go back to El Paso. To El Paso. To El Paso. To my El Paso.
There we go, Dave Keenan and Tune, local Tune. We were talking earlier about our favourite places in Dundalk, and I think David might share the same one as you, Kieran, yeah. Oriel Park. Anyway, you are listening to Ready, Steady, Go. We are going through the 9 questions that were handed to us yesterday. And the next one up is, how did you get started with Dundalk FM, Stephen?
Okay, this is going to be an interesting story. So basically, in the summer of 2014, it was coming into, like, school was finishing up, and the summer months were coming in where I just used to sit around and do nothing in first year. So Mam turned around and said, right, time to find something for this fella to do. And Paddy Mac was actually doing a 1-week radio course for 3 young people, and I was the only one to do it. So what was supposed to be a week-long volunteering here in Dundalk FM turned into 3 months, which has turned into about 5 years. So, yeah.
Okay.
That was the start of it.
So it was almost accidental.
Oh, it was almost accidental, but I have to say, I'm very surprised at myself, because the first time I came in here, Joe Duffy was on the mic. I came in to meet Paddy when my mum said all about it. She took me up, she drove me and parked there. I said, "Mum, where are we going?" Told me we were going into the chemist or the Kingfisher. The doctors was also here at the same time. And she said, "We're going into the Dundalk FM. I'm after talking to Paddy Mac, and he wants to meet you."
All
and
right.
I had always wanted to be on the radio. I'd always wanted to do something like this, so that was this. I came in here and my mum was speaking like this to Joe Duffy, and I didn't say 2 words.
A lot has changed since then.
How the time have changed.
Were you aware, because I know a lot of people aren't, were you aware that Dundalk FM is a community station and that it relies on volunteers and that it's always looking for people
to come in? At the age I was 14, so yeah. Like, when you think of a radio station, I was thinking of people running around with checkboards and all this and all this crazy stuff. You come in and then you realise, oh, they're actually looking for volunteers. And then you're like, yeah. And my friends asked me, what's the story with Dundalk FM? And I said, anyone can get involved in it, so if you're interested in it, get involved, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, Kieran.
I was interviewed by Neil Ross, who asked me to come on and talk about, he used to do a show called The Lily Whites on a Monday night, and I was interviewed for an hour and I just got hooked on it straight away. He then asked me to come and join him on the Sports Academy with John Murphy, and I became a weekly panelist with him. It was a great time. Now John does a great show at the moment, but at the time there was James Rogers, who was at the Democrat at the time. There was somebody who used to come in for rugby. There was a guy who used to come in for boxing. So there was a wide range of sports that were being discussed every week. And then Neil, unfortunately, passed away, and I just felt that it was time for me to kind of step out on my own. So I asked Alan, I spoke to Alan about doing different shows, and it kind of came at a very awkward time for me, because I started doing a show on a Saturday afternoon, and then all of a sudden I'm going off to do my teaching postgraduate. So I had to leave, and Alan, to his credit and to the credit of Dundalk FM, when I came back, I had a chat with them, and they said to me, look, there's nothing free at the moment, but they kept me in touch with things. And then lo and behold, I got a show on a Friday afternoon, and the rest to say is history. But I just absolutely love it here. But the biggest highlight that I've had working at Dundalk FM was, there was Alan rang me and said, John can't make it for Friday night, we need you to commentate the Dundalk versus Limerick game. So I was the head commentator with Gussie Herity, and we won 6-2 that night. So I got to commentate loads of things, of events. And it was the biggest thrill doing a live match commentary on Dundalk FM. It really, really was. So I know I've done lots of different things for the station, but that has to be the highlight for me, was commentating the game in Oriel Park. You know, and when you think about, they have also been there in Oriel Park for such a long time, and the service that they give to people has been magnificent. So full credit to them. They've been absolutely excellent for Dundalk Football Club.
My story is accidental, really, as well. A bit like Staz, I found myself unemployed, and I got this. The DSP got it in their head that I was languishing at their expense, so they sent me a letter and made me
harsh.
One of those offers that, you know, I really couldn't refuse, and it was to take up a course, and the course was for a number of weeks, and it was people of a similar age to me. There was not, because that was one when they rang me. I said, well, okay, I'll do this, but I don't want to be in with a load of kids. And they said, no, these are all, so everybody was over a certain age and had worked, you know, had a career behind them, and for various reasons had found themselves at that juncture. And at the end of it, there was, we were told you had to get work experience. And, you know, I think everyone in the room was of the same opinion that that's what they've been doing for the last 30 odd years. But anyway, it was like, okay, I can do that. I can go around and maybe somebody will, you know, take me in for 2 weeks to tidy up their files, or, you know, to answer their phones so they can go skiing. Or, and I said, no, I'm not going to do that. If I'm going to do work experience, let's do something that I'm interested in that I've never done before. So I got on to Paddy, because occasionally Paddy would call me in to do an ad for him. And I said, look, could I come in there for a couple of weeks? And I was really thinking of the production side to, you know, look at that. And again, I had been in and out of here, but didn't understand the structure, didn't understand that it was volunteer based either. I came in, and on the first morning, you know, I came into Paddy, and we were sitting there, and next thing I knew, like, the light is on, and he's, you know, he has you on air. And it went from there. It throughout the day, he was just, oh, you did well there, go in and do that again. And I remember the very first day, I was on the lunchbox here with Peter Carroll, and news broke that Maggie Thatcher had passed away.
Oh, wow.
I was never a fan of the lady, I have to say. And I can recall saying to Peter, have you got Elvis Costello Tramp the Dirt Down? And I thought, did I ever think I'd get an opportunity to do that on the day Maggie Thatcher died? So there we go. And again, that was 5 years ago. And then I started to...
Only 5 years ago?
Yeah, to present on Town Talk. And nice. Again, that's...
I honestly assumed you were here longer than...
No. 5 years ago, it was the 8th of April, as I said, Maggie Thatcher's anniversary.
Crazy.
So there we go. Have we another track lined up, or will we go to our next item?
We'll go
to our next item. Okay. And this, yeah, if you were to take a year out, what would you do?
Oh, if I was to take a year out, it would definitely be music orientated anyway. Probably take a year out, work on building my studio in my room, which has been probably one of the biggest plans I've had in a long time. But it's just it's one of them, you know, when you have one of them things that you really want to get around to and you just can't get the time to do it. So that'd be the main thing, and just work on making my own music. Like, I've been DJing now quite a while. I'm DJing in McManus quite a bit. I'm doing gigs here and there and everywhere, so that'd be my plan. I actually got a show in the Lock FM as well, so We'll see what happens. Yeah.
That doesn't even sound like a year out to me. That sounds like something you're going to do now, you know, when the leaving's finished.
No. When I finish secondary school now and finish my leaving service, it'll be media I'll be going into.
Right.
College. I'm looking at the course in Uri, but sure, we'll see what happens.
So, Kieran,
turn the phone off.
Mm-hmm.
Get on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Go to New York. And I'll come back a year later.
Okay. We're not going to ask then.
And I would literally just... I would go and I would see what media opportunities there are there. I'd see what comes out of it. But sometimes, like, and I do it occasionally where I just switch the phone off for a couple of days because I find sometimes I'm physically attached to the stupid thing. So, you know, you just sometimes you'll just need your own time. And I think it would be, if I was to do that, I'd go to New York because I always find this, like, I remember saying this to, I was interviewed before about this, and it was Harry Lee, and he said to me, "Do you not like find New York intimidating or dangerous?" And I was like, "No, I actually find New York a lot safer than walking around Dublin." And the reason being is that everybody leaves you alone. In Dublin, it's, do you have a fiver? Do you have this? You stop for concern. You know, there's all this kind of, there's a lot of thing going. Whereas in New York, no one bothers you. You walk around the streets in New York, and no one will pay, and you can just be your own person, you know, which is something that I think some people need to do every now and again. Just go away, switch off, and be your own person for a while and see what happens.
Okay, yeah, I'd imagine you can be quite anonymous in New York, and yeah, that sounds good. I would, my other favourite place in the world, apart from my kitchen, is it's a little village in Tuscany called Cardoso. It's the birthplace of my father-in-law, and I've been numerous occasions. I was married there. I absolutely adore it. And I've had this idea for a long time, and maybe I will get to realise it. When we're there, one of the things that is most pleasurable is the food. And Tuscany is famed for its food. But because we've got a lot of family over there, we're invited to people's homes, which is wonderful. And you get to taste authentic Tuscan home-cooked food. And everybody over there are, you know, Michelin stars, chefs. And they all have their own little signature dishes, their family recipes, or, you know, they put their own little twist on it. It's also got the most incredible, breathtaking landscape. So I would take off and I would take with me my nephew, Fra Lucchese, who is an amazing photographer.
And I know Fra very well.
You do, yeah. We would go for a year. I would travel.
Can I give you a fun fact?
Yeah.
Taught his daughter Kiva.
Ah, very good.
I taught Kiva for a year.
Yeah. Kiva was in Cardoso with us last year. And I would go around people's homes, talk to them about the recipes, get the stories behind them. And Fra would take photographs. And then I would compile them into a cookery book. But it would be more than a cookery book because it would also be, you know, a work of history. And then the wonderful photographs of the landscape and the food. And while I was there, I think I'd see if I could write that novel as well that, you know, I'd like to think I have inside me. So, yeah,
What would the novel be on? Do you have an inkling or an outline of what aspect of your life would it be, or would it be just a complete fiction?
Well, it would be fiction.
It'd be fiction.
It would be fiction. I'm a great reader of fiction, and look, there's not enough in my life to write a factual book. So yeah, no, it most definitely would be fiction. But you know, the cookery one though, it's something that, you know, I've been thinking about for a long time. And
Tales from Tuscany.
Tales from Tuscany, yeah, but it is that whole, you know, again, it's something that's very doable, but you need to, you know, when you've got to prioritise other things. But if I had that year out, that sort of, you know, Virginia Woolf's Room of One's Own, that's where I'd be.
Yeah. Perfect.
Anyway, I'm looking at the clock. Will we, listen, I'll tell you what, we'll take our next item and then maybe we'll take a track and come back for our last two. This one,
Got your track lined up.
We've decided what goes in here, apparently. It's the Tabala Rossa, right? So I don't know. I'll start because I had a bit of time to think about this. And I'm going to ask each of you, first of all, what was the last novel you finished and what are you reading now?
The last novel I read before the one I'm reading now, I think it was Tommy Reichenthal and My Boy in Belsen. Yeah, that man is he was in the concentration camps during World War II as a child, and a couple of years ago when I was in the Dada Sal, he came to visit us and gave a bit of a talk on his time there, what the book contained, and he read a bit of an extract from the book. And as soon as he read that, I just said, I have to get that book and read. And the stories in it are just incredible. He's a very, very strong man. And the second book, because as people will start to understand, I'm very history orientated. It's a book about Albert Speer, Hitler's architect, and it's inside Hitler's bunker, and it tells you the whole stories of the run up to the fall of Berlin and inside the bunker as they're preparing for it all.
Okay. It's a heavy reading.
Fire and Fury, Inside Trump's White House, the first year. Very interesting book. It gives you a big insight into the influence of Steve Bannon and how his influence changed the course of the election, particularly going into the last 10 weeks, and how Trump realistically, as much as he is this so-called business person, he's not fit to be. Now, a lot of people would say that he's not, you know, it's very evident he's not fit to be president, but when you see his logistical decisions that he makes in-house, you can see definitely how bad he is. He's trying to implement his business persona into the political world, and it doesn't work because it requires pragmatism. It requires, you know, a little bit of give and take. He doesn't do that, and because that's why there's so many firings, and that's why there's so many scandals, is because Trump just can't handle being told no. He's like a petulant child. That's the best way to describe it. And the current book I'm reading, my sister gave it to me because she finished it. My sister, she was called to the bar a couple of years ago, and it's The Secret Barrister. So I'm reading that. It's about tales from, you know, the world of law and how barristers work and how the functionality of it. And it's quite interesting to see because it's very, the legal profession in this country is very unique in the sense that, you know, your main point of legal contact is a solicitor, but it's the barrister that represents you in the court of law. And, you know, that connection that you have to have with solicitors and the clients and stuff, it's quite interesting to read. So that's what I'm reading at the moment.
Excellent. Yep. I'm very much, as I said, I'm a fiction reader. I'm currently reading Colm Tobin's Nora Webster, which is sort of a sequel to Brooklyn, but it's nothing to do just other than it's set in the same area and some of the characters cross over. Colm Tobin is one of our, you know, the best writers alive at the moment, as far as I'm concerned. And before that, it was an author I'd never read before. I was aware of him, and it was John Boyne who wrote The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. And I'd written quite a lot for younger people. And he's an Irish writer. Again, I'd only realised quite lately that he was an Irish writer, but he didn't set many of his novels in Irish in Ireland. His last two were, and the one I've just finished is The Hearts Invisible Furies, which spans almost 100 years in Irish history. It's about one man and his journey through life. He is adopted and he crosses over throughout the novel quite a lot with his birth mother before they're actually reunited. Now, a lot of it is, you know, it's not very plausible, but, you know, it works because it is a work of fiction. Also, he charts a lot of the changes and a lot of the historic moments in Irish history from a fictional perspective, and that's really interesting. And he's got a beautiful way of writing, a really, really easy read. It was 700 and odd pages that I literally gobbled up, and to be honest with you, I could have done it in one sitting if I'd had the time. I would have just sat there and done nothing else. But an absolutely marvellous novel. I highly recommend it.
Well, I do have a small confession. I am reading one other book, but it's for my class and it's for my children, and it's Roddy Doyle's The Giggler Treatment.
I love Roddy Doyle.
Absolutely hilarious book. And you know, you have to be very careful what you read children. So if there's something anyway kind of a little bit naughty. Now, if anybody doesn't know what The Giggler Treatment is about, it's about this. The Gigglers are these fictional characters that push dog poo into the paths of people who have been bold or have been naughty, and this is their punishment. So essentially, there is the talk about this character who's about to get his foot straight into the dog poop, and it's this mad adventure to try and get him not, because they realise that they've made a mistake. So there's like 10 seconds they're trying to get the dog from the house, and 9 seconds they, you know, they've told the children what's about to happen, and 8 seconds. It's a fascinating but very well told, and Roddy Doyle is an exceptional writer, and he's done a brilliant job for writing for kids.
He really has. Okay, I think we've one more question and then we've a challenge. And we're going to do the question quickly and then try and set up the challenge before we finish the show. If someone gave you €1 million, what would you do for the town of Dundalk, Stephen?
€1 million for the town of Dundalk. And I funnily enough, about 2 weeks ago, I was saying this to a friend of mine as we were walking home from the nightclub. If I had any sort of money at all, I would make a venue in Dundalk in the centre of the town, and it would consist of one mass hall, and there would be nothing else in it. There would be a stage and possibly a table, and I would allow bands, acoustic acts, DJs of all genres to take the place over for a night. And it would be a venue like that, where we just, anyone who was into their music and people who wanted to go and see these bands would be able to go.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Kieran.
I've a lot of bugbears of what's right with this town, and I've a lot of things that needs to be cleaned up with this town has such potential, where it's located and everything. And I think, Stephen, you've got a great idea there, but I think if we need to start investing in, I'm going to be right. Just bear with me. I'm in France last June, and I'm walking through Euro Disney. I'm walking through Main Street USA, and it's all these old school shop fronts with all these lights, and it's really bright and it's really bright. And I sat there and said, why can't we invest? That we clean up, that we get the paths all sorted in town, the roads sorted, and we get these type of shop fronts put in the front of all of the towns. How inviting would that look to businesses or to small companies up and down this country, where you're able to say you'll get this old school shop front, you'll get the facilities put in place. And I think if you were to get a couple of kind of big hitters to invest in that with you, like I'm talking your... For sake of, if you got a Nando's put in, if you got a H&M, if you got one of the, like, you took some of the, how would you say, the shops out of the marshes and put them into the centre of the town, it would become a hub. But then at night, all these lights light up and all these shop windows are on display. I think it would look fantastic.
Totally hear you.
Yeah.
I've three things. The first one is, and it wouldn't take that much, and it wouldn't take anything near a million. And if anybody wants to fund it and they're listening today, please feel free to do so. And that is, I would get a proper outside broadcast unit for Dundalk FM and put us on the road. The second thing is, I would fund homework clubs for all of the children in the town, that are attractive to the children, but also takes that burden that your children would go away and do their homework before they come home. We wouldn't have all these dreadful fights. And the last thing is, a friend of mine told me recently, who's separated, that the thing she misses most from her marriage is her dishwasher. And I thought, God, yeah, I don't think I could survive without a dishwasher. And I really, really pity anybody who hasn't got one. So I would buy a fully functioning dishwasher for every home in the town. Believe me, we would have much happier people if that was the case. Anyway, listen, we've a challenge. We have to ring somebody in the US, and we cannot ring John Kiger, American correspondent, because somebody else did that. Good morning, John, by the way. I know he's listening in.
We love you, John.
But we do have somebody else, so we're going to play a track where we try and get them on the line.
And this is from Elvis Costello and Tramp the Dirt Down. I had to do it.
I saw a newspaper picture from the political campaign. A woman was kissing a child who was obviously in pain. She spills with compassion. Is that young child's face in her hands she grips? Can you imagine all that greed and avarice coming down on that child's lips? Well, I hope I don't die too soon. I pray the Lord my soul to save. Yes, I'll be a good boy. I'm trying so hard to behave, because there's one thing I know. I'd like to live long enough to savor. That's when it finally puts you in the ground. I'll stay. Dirt, dirt,
When England was the whore of the world, Margaret was her madam.
There we go. We're going to have to fade out of Elvis there because we have Mike Cook on the line from New York. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning to you all.
How are you?
Yeah, we're doing fine. I'm sure I'm doing as well as you guys.
Okay, Mike, I know you've been in Dundalk.
Yes, I have. Back October 2015.
Right, and how did you find it?
I loved it. It was, coming, just living north of New York City here. I like the city feel that you had there.
Great. And I understand you might have got up to Oriel Park as well?
Yes, we did that too. That was quite interesting how well maintained and what's involved to keep that place in pitch perfect shape, so to speak.
Well, we've come a long way since then, and we actually have a bit of money behind us now. So the next time you're over, you really, really will be impressed. Can you tell us, Mike, what was it you loved most about Dundalk?
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you say again?
What was it you loved most about Dundalk?
I guess the people. The people and how cheery and how friendly they all were. It was fantastic.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, Mike. And I'm also very glad that you spoke to us this morning. Listen, the next time you're in town, you'll have to drop in and introduce yourself personally.
Oh, I look forward to it. That'll be this October again.
Good stuff. Well, roll on October. That is Mike Cook all the way from New York. Thank you for taking our call.
Enjoy the day.
And that was Mike, who we rang from all the way from New
we
York.
We rang in New York. We never, ever met Mike before then. We were taking a chance. Mike could have come on with, a serious case of Tourette's and shut us all down.
Or even worse, he could have been just like, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway, we couldn't get Mr. Trump on the line, so we decided to go for Mike. Listen, that's it. We are out of time. That's our ready, steady go, and we do have to go. It's been, I don't know, I really enjoy this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, hasn't it?
Well, we should do a current affairs show at some stage. The three of us will sit down and write the wrongs of what's going on in this world. We'll get Alvaro in for comedic value.
Listen, we get Alvaro in, we may be shut down. Listen, thanks a million, lads. For coming in here this morning. But more importantly, thank you out there for listening to us. Up next, you have the Beaten Tracks.